Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Stirring the Cauldron. Now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Merry meet everybody, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron here on the Para-X Radio Network. Tonight we're going to be giving a nod to the West Coast ghosts with my guest Brian Patrick. Now, Brian's a feature film producer and paranormal investigator based in L.A., and his films include Predators from Beyond Neptune, co-produced with Don Murphy, and the award-winning documentary of the fans of Rocky Horror, entitled A Regular Frankie Fan. Now, his paranormal focus is historic locations and places of public interest that suspect or claim paranormal activity. His investigations have taken him across the southwestern United States, and include several infamous locations such as the Linda Vista Community Hospital, the Pico House, Preston Castle, the Goldfield Hotel, and the Mizpah Hotel, and the Washoe Club, and the old Washoe Club, anyway, and a whole lot more. And, you know, that just goes to prove that we here on the West Coast do have stuff, guys. Believe it or not, we do. Brian also serves the media, including the motion picture and television industry, as a paranormal technical advisor. He's the creator of the ongoing web series 7.6 Hertz, and there's a lot of new episodes in production. And Brian is frequently tapped to speak at paranormal-themed events and has numerous TV and radio appearances to his credit. So again, we always talk about, or we always hear about, paranormal events happening on the East Coast. I think there's this dividing line somewhere along the Mississippi River, and people forget there is a West Coast. But very seldom, you know, with the exception of the occasional Queen Mary investigation, do we hear about things happening here on the left coast. But we've got just as many wonderful places to investigate and just as many paracons out here as well. And there's one coming up on March 8th and 9th, the True Paranormal LA Supernatural Summit at the Glen Tavern Inn. And Brian will be speaking there. So we'll be talking about that a little bit later, along with an interesting case that he's been working on and lots of other good stuff. So, Brian, I'm going to take a breath. Thank you for joining us tonight. Welcome to the show.
Oh, Marla, it is wonderful to be here. It is wonderful to hear your voice. You know, I miss you. I haven't seen you since what? Thanksgiving, I think it was.
A Thanksgiving, yes.
A Thanksgiving.
Several Thanksgivings.
Yeah, several Thanksgivings ago.
And I remember cranberries and an orange. Very
yeah.
good. Very good. See, it left it.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, you did good. Well, okay, so I've known you for, what, close to forever?
Close to forever. You know, we grew up, you know, we were teens in the 80s.
Yeah. And when I first met you, you were still in little short pants and hanging out.
So were you, by the way.
Well, that mine were different.
They were hot pants.
They were like hot pants, yeah. But, you know, I just kind of figured it was time we got together for some joint cauldron stirring. And you've been doing so much terrific stuff in the paranormal field the past few years. So I'm really glad that we finally managed to be able to sit down and talk about some of it. And like I said earlier, we've got stuff, lots of stuff to cover tonight. But I never knew that you were interested in the paranormal. And then one day you turn up as an investigator, a speaker. I mean, where'd that come from? Did the house on Belden Drive have anything to do with it? Because I've heard stories about that house, felt kind of uneasy there at times, and it was, and still is, in a historic old Hollywood neighborhood.
Yeah, it was one of the original homes. I grew up in Hollywood, you know, as a little kid, in one of the original Hollywoodland homes. And, yeah, you know, that house was strange, and I didn't really think about the house until I decided to become a paranormal investigator. But yeah, the house was definitely strange. And when I look back on it, there were some kind of odd things that happened. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just one of those things where you just feel the house is odd. And I know my sister Stephanie has stories that I'm sure she's told you about the home.
Yeah,
there was a weird kind of a sense that there was a presence there, not so much as anything oppressive, but something observant. Mm-hmm. And, that house, I think about that house all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I would love to get back there and investigate it, because I still feel there's got to be something there.
Well, it's kind of the neighborhood, because I got called out to do an investigation at the old Marie Astor house, which is in that neighborhood. And all those houses were built kind of the same way. They didn't spread out wide like most houses in California. They were built upward, and especially the ones in the hills. And so there are many, many levels to these houses. And, I mean, on that one investigation we did at the Astor House, I mean, we were up and down. It was three levels, you know, and then a lower level. And, I mean, it was one of those investigations that made you wish you had oxygen, because it was just crazy.
And right, oxygen or a walker,
An elevator. And your house, then, was built the same way. I mean, you know, some of the bedrooms were way down, and then you'd go up here and up there and over and around.
Yeah, it was definitely a house that felt like it was spilling over a hillside. And, you know, it was built down a hillside. There were some strange things in there. In fact, when my parents moved in, there was a room that was sealed off. That was the master bedroom. I don't know if you remember the house, but my father was a construction worker, and he added a bathroom to the master bedroom. Well, that wasn't a bathroom. That was a huge walk-in closet. And it was filled with somebody's belongings that had been walled up. So somebody had passed away, and they just sealed it up.
Nice.
So, yeah, there were some interesting clothes in there, and, you know, unfortunately, that's all gone, but...
Yeah. Can you just imagine somebody walling up all your property? And I mean, if it was me, I'd like, open that wall. Get it out of there. Give it to Salvation Army. Do something with it. You know, why wall it up, you know?
Yeah, I mean, please don't, you know, don't hang on to my stuff. Get rid of it. You know, put it to good use.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, because honestly, you know, there were years here and there. I mean, you know, Stephanie's always telling me what's going on with you and this and that. But there was a lot of years that I didn't know what was going on with you, I guess when you were finishing growing up and stuff. And then all of a sudden, I'm seeing you're doing all this investigation, you're doing all these things. I'm like, wow, where did that come from?
Yeah, Marla, that came up on me fairly quick. I'd been interested in the paranormal. Of course, you know, in high school, you're kind of dabbling in it. And, you know, I dated, this was a while back, I dated a girl who was a... you know, in a family of psychic. Her father was a psychic investigator. What was his name? Tom Sexton. And Tom was, you know, a person who would go into a home or, you know, try and solve a crime. And, you know, he was one of those guys. And he was fairly popular. And, you know, hanging around this family, you know, they kind of got you into that mode. And, It was interesting. I can tell you it was uncomfortable because dinner with that family was pass the peas. By the way, don't ever go in the army. You know, it was always some sort of strange off the cuff remark that came from his ability. Mm-hmm. You know, so I kind of did a little bit in high school, and just you know, it was probably about 6 years back. A friend of mine and his wife were going on an investigation. You know, I kind of said, hey, I always wanted to do that. So they invited me along, and that was my first investigation, and it was Linda Vista Hospital. Mm-hmm. Now, it was a larger group, and we all broke up into separate little groups, but that night, of all things, we ended up with a piece of evidence that was just absolutely phenomenal. Hmm. We were walking up and going through a surgical suite, and there was audible humming of a little girl. It was three of us, and we had no idea what it was. Somebody had opened a door, and actually something, she felt an energy come out and kind of go through her. And it was a really interesting experience. And I'm like, oh, I kind of want to do this again. And it turned into almost an obsession. I realized that this type of thing happens all the time. And, you know, I experience it quite a bit. I can't explain what happens on these investigations. I can't explain what these things are, but they happen. So, yeah, I've been investigating ever since. That was the first taste, my Linda Vista Hospital experience. That ended up actually being, it ended up being the catalyst for, I guess it was only an episode of Ghost Adventures, and they featured our evidence. And while they were actually reviewing the tape, they were recording with their recorders, they played it back, and they actually caught the same humming on their recorder, which was happening while they were there. It's very strange. Linda Vista is an interesting place.
It is, and in fact, it's funny because one of our show hosts just popped in, Jeff Gould, and
Jeffrey Gould, hello.
Yes, yeah. And he just said, huh, I pop in right now, and he's talking about Linda Vista, you know.
So. Yeah, I see Jeffrey actually quite a bit. He's busy in the Southern California ghost, paranormal community, and I see him pop up at events quite often.
Exactly. And he's a busy guy. There are no coincidences, none.
None.
Oh, Jeff, okay, he's asking who you are. Brian Patrick, Jeff, I know you came in a little bit late.
And he's going, who?
He will know. Well, you know what? You've got some pretty interesting theories about things paranormal, and I want to start with that because yesterday we were going back and forth about what we might be talking about tonight.
Right, and everything is, you know, I'm an open book for you. Anything you want to talk about.
Now, some people, especially Reverend Tim, would say, oh, you shouldn't have said that, but hey, that's okay.
But we I trust going, you.
Thank you. We were going back and forth about what we'd be talking about. And one of the things that really interested me in hearing more about is your concept about the possibility that paranormal investigators might actually leave energy behind in the locations to investigate. And it's something I'd never thought about, but it does make a lot of sense because we do leave our imprints or residual energy behind in lots and lots and lots of situations, probably a lot more often than we think. And it doesn't always have to be something traumatic. I mean, any strong, focused emotion can do it. So do tell, spill it.
Yeah, you've actually hit on a very good point, is that any strong emotion can do this. Now, I kind of came up with this concept by reading about the work that was done in the Princeton laboratories. Now, they were doing work with random number generators. And what they were doing was seeing if people could actually will a random number generator to not be so random. Mm-hmm. And what they had discovered was, well, you put one person in front of this darn thing, not much difference. Pretty random. But if you put a group of people within this over a period of time, you know, over repeat tests, it becomes evident that that random number generator isn't so random. And they found that it is, you know, a group of people with an emotional output, something that like is akin to, like, let's say a sporting event or something, some sort of positive thing or just a strong emotion. And I thought, well, wait a minute. We're all investigating these places, and we all have heightened senses. You know, we're on alert. Mm-hmm. We certainly are, you know, trying to keep our emotions in check, and by that, we are in a heightened state of emotion, you know, emotional state. Mm-hmm. So if they can will a random number generator to actually change, that's actually changing the physical nature of the world around us. That's by will. This energy is actually going out and affecting things. Does it stay? You know, my whole big question is, why do people think graveyards are haunted? This ties into this because it's, you know, if you think about it, it's people, you know, when somebody passes away, you might have a service, and people are focusing on one object, that person. You know, it's a focused emotion, a strong emotion, and it's from multiple people focusing on this one person. Is the energy left behind what we experience? I'm not saying, you know, this is just a possibility, but let's say that's the case. That's why we see people that we think we know. It's not the person. It's the memory of the person. It's their essence that we have created and imparted and left behind. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's kind of the road that I'm going down.
Yeah, no, and it makes sense. And you know, the other thing that I always laugh when people think that cemeteries are completely, you know, haunted. Well, yeah, they are. You know, I mean, but here's the thing. I don't think that the majority of people buried in any particular cemetery are sitting on their gravestones.
Right.
You know, they will come back and visit for whatever reason. They have the free will to come and go as they want. So, yeah, I mean, you can go to a cemetery. I mean, we've all been to Hollywood Forever, for example, had mm-hmm. experiences there. I mean, it's a very active place. But it's not that people are just sitting around waiting, okay, well, you know, is my granddaughter going to come and see me today? You know, it doesn't work like that. Although we did find at Hollywood Forever, I was with Scott Michaels and Victoria Gross, mm-hmm. and we were just standing there in the cathedral mausoleum, and, you know, that place just always gives me the creeps because of the 12 apostles that are there,
yeah.
Beautiful statues, but they're very kind of foreboding in a way. But we were standing in this one area, and Victoria kept picking up all kinds of psychic weird things going on there, and it really did feel like a downer. You know, and I said, well, what's going on here? And she said, you know, she said, there's a lot of people here. And she says, look, there's a lot of Masonic symbols on these graves. It was the cremation, you know, mm-hmm. things. Cremation things. That sounds really professional. Anyway, but she
said, it's the place where they put the burned people.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
she said there was a guy standing there, and she said he was afraid to cross. And she said, but there were a lot of people like him there. Now, maybe this was a religious belief that they didn't fulfill the life like they thought they should have, or they had sinned, or whatever the reason was. She says, this whole area is covered with these spirits who are afraid to cross over because they think they're going to get sent to hell. And she says, you can feel it. It's so palpable here. So, you know, maybe in some cases there are, you know, little focus groups of people that aren't leaving. But generally, I mean, cemeteries, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that this is the case. I'm saying this is a possibility. Certainly, you know, I have to say that I've had experiences. We all have had interesting experiences. In fact, I got to say, there was a 2007 Gallup poll that said 75% of the United States, I hate throwing out percentages because, you know, what do I have to back that up? Just my word. But they believe in ghosts and paranormal activity. Now, when you're on the street, that's a different story. A lot of people kind of shy away from this. Mm-hmm. But I have to say that we've all had experiences, and there are those moments that you believe in your heart of hearts something strange has happened. And I had one, my best friend, actually. Here's the personal story. I was at a party, and this was I can't remember what year it was. I was still in high school. And a group of us got together, close friends, drama geeks, and had a party for the 4th of July. One of our friends couldn't make it. She had to go to Reno with her family, who they were not really a happy family. Mm-hmm. And I show up. I'm there for a couple of minutes, and I see her. And she walks through, and she goes into the living room. I kind of follow her there, and she's gone. And I'm asking people, where is she? But she was just here. I find out she's in Reno. Well, this is a strange thing. I come to get the phone call the next day that she had taken her own life while in Reno. And years later, I found out that it was the time that I saw her. Mm-hmm. And so this is a real thing. You know, I saw her. I can't say that this is residual energy from, you know, us collectively thinking about her. She had to have been there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can't explain these things away. I can't say that this is because of this particular scientific reason. You know, we kind of have to go on belief that these things exist, and that's it.
Yeah, belief and trust your gut, you know? I mean, so many times you come across something and you start doubting yourself. Well, I didn't really see that, or, you know, that must have been this or that. But your gut will tell you whether or not it is. But we just sometimes we're trained not to believe in that.
We're hardwired not to believe that.
Yeah, exactly.
We're created, you know, the way we learn and the way we think and the way we perceive the world is, you know, pattern recognition, and we're trying to make sense all the time of things, and when they just don't make sense, it's like we kind of have a little short circuit. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you know, those short circuit things still happen all the time. I mean, I've been on several investigations that, you know, things happen and I can't explain it.
Mm-hmm. And I'm of the belief that things will never be completely explained. I mean, I don't think these things are for us to find out right now.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah. We'll experience them. We'll scratch our heads, whatever. But I don't think it's like dangling the carrot in front of us. You know, there's more to come, but we're not going to tell you what, but here's a little, you know, have an appetizer, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, it works out pretty well. Now, as a seasoned investigator, because you are now, what do you think about the theory that some locations can be overfished, meaning that places that are constantly investigated can kind of fizzle out after a bit? I was talking to David Wells right after Most Haunted came out and went to the famously haunted Winchester House. Mm-hmm. And he said that nothing really happened that night because spirits were just plain bored with people coming in and out and don't even bother to interact anymore. Have you ever gotten the impression that some of the most popular haunts around here that you've investigated, the ones that everybody goes out here, like the Queen Mary, Linda Vista, do you ever get the impression that might be the case?
Yes, I do. Absolutely, I do. And that also ties into energy left behind from investigators. Mm-hmm. I think that sometimes, a place can get played out. And if we are leaving, our imprint behind, some of those imprints are they've got to be confusing. I really think that, I've been to places and I'm like, the first few times I'm in awe of what happens. There are certainly things that are phenomenal that happen. Now, you can say that that's because I'm unfamiliar with the location and I'm unfamiliar with the surroundings, but, I take the time to acclimate myself to the environment so I kind of know what's going on. Mm-hmm. On repeat investigations, you keep going back and keep going back. If there has been a constant flow of people going through there, there have been times where I come back and I'm like, this place is dead. And I mean that in the energy sense, like there's something lacking here. Something has happened. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Linda Vista is one of those places that I feel has happened. There have been people who have gone through there, and I'll be quite honest, there have been people who have gone through there, and it's a circus, And I think there's been a lot of confusing energy that's been left behind there. And I'm not saying just that particular location. There's certainly other locations as well. Mm-hmm. But that's the first one that comes to the top of my head.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think what David said was, he said, they just need a rest. He said if they had sent him out, which he used to scout the locations before they would come out all the way from the UK to do the shows, he said they didn't send him out on this one. But he said if they had, he would have suggested they not come by. His theory was this place needs to be shut down for a couple of years and just let everything settle because it's – he said, you see there are spirits there, but they just won't even turn around. I mean, it's just like, we're bored humans, okay. that kind of thing. And,
yeah, there is one location that I do feel needs a rest, and that's the Goldfield Hotel in Goldfield, Havana.
Yeah.
I honestly kind of feel that it's almost like it's a friend and it just needs a rest. It really does. Mm-hmm. The Goldfield is a wonderful town. They're nice folks, but this poor hotel has been, people were breaking in for a while and they had no respect for what this building was. Mm-hmm. And that's one place that I do get a feeling that there is something there that appreciates the building and does not appreciate what people want to do there.
Yeah,
so,
well,
I mean, that's one of the places that I have a great respect for.
Well, it's also, I think, too, not necessarily people that go there, serious investigators that really want to do the right thing for whatever reason. But you put any of these locations on TV, somebody famous goes there, mm-hmm. everybody goes there. So but they don't go there with the same intent that a regular investigator would. They will go there, oh yeah, well you're a ghost here, come on, show yourself, mm-hmm. And I'm not even talking about provoking, I'm talking about just like, I dare you to show up, who the hell are you, that the tough guy kind of thing, and the disrespect.
Right.
And that's a thing. Yeah, go ahead.
If I was a ghost, I mean, I'm sorry. I'm not a performing circus monkey. Mm-hmm. It's really difficult because if you put yourself in the shoes of the person or entity you are trying to communicate with, would you like to be treated in that way? Mm-hmm. I mean, people coming in going, what's your name? Can you show yourself? Do you know what year it is? If you get hundreds of people doing this over time, of course you're going to get bored.
Well, yeah. And it's the intent behind it, too. I guess a lot of people still don't realize that people on the other side were once here, and they needed to be treated with the same respect that you would that you would treat them if they were still alive. And more importantly, they can see through you. You know, if you're going to be out there being a jackass, you know, they're not stupid. Just because you lose your body doesn't mean you lose your mind in that sense. Not literally, anyway. Right. You know, I mean, how insulting can that be sometimes?
It's got to be terribly insulting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, you know, and the other thing is, you're right, it's the investigator's intent. You know, I hesitate to ask the question to other investigators of why you're doing this. You know, I've come to my own personal, you know, conclusion on why I do it, and it's personal for me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, is it to get, gather information? Is it to, you know, see a larger picture? Or is it bragging and boasting rights?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes it's very confusing to figure out what people's intent is when it comes to investigating. And I'll tell you, I do have, like, damn you, Marla, I'm opening up, and this is going to be bad. I'll tell you this. I do have an issue with people who do residential investigations. And for the folks that do residential investigations that are listening to this, I'm not pointing fingers at you. I'm just giving you my opinion. If you do residential investigations, please have a social worker on call or at the investigation, because you're dealing with people who are going through crisis, and you need professional help to work with these people. I completely, 100% feel that if you are doing anything with residential cases, these people are in crisis and they need professional help. I'm not saying they're crazy. I'm saying this is an emotional, traumatic experience. They've reached out to you. If you are not prepared to give them the emotional and the empathetic support that they require, don't do it. And certainly don't do it to throw EVPs up on Facebook. You know, well, if that's your goal, just find another hobby.
Yeah, well, me and EVPs are not really friendly. Either I don't hear them, or they just don't want to ever talk to me. And it will come. Okay, I need to bring Reverend Tim in for a minute. And just so you know, Brian, you said something that really made him jump up and down in a good way. And he doesn't often pop in this, but come on, Tim.
Hey, guys, Brian, I got to tell you something. I can't believe you actually mentioned social workers. I have friends who are social workers. I have friends that are exorcists. I have friends that are priests in different denominations. When I do residentials, you never leave a person in a lurch. Do you know how, I can't even tell you guys, and Marla will tell you that it drives me insane to have to go out there and pick up the pieces of the damage that some of these paranormal teams, who are nothing more than thrill riders, do. They do so much damage. And the reason is not because they're mean-spirited, it's because they don't know any better. You know, I mean, I have great friends in the Wiccan community. They have so much support for the families of which they go and they help and they serve. It's amazing. Yet I turn around and I get these calls where it's like, well, this group came in, they never came back. Or this group came in and they said, well, you know, maybe it's not paranormal. Maybe, you know, you should really look at your medicines. Well, then they don't tell them anything. It's like, what the hell's wrong with you? Thank you for actually, oh my God, Marla, he's an investigator with common sense. The world, did you just feel that? The world just stopped for, it just shuddered for a couple seconds. But really.
Well, my private message just lit up and Tim was writing in capital letters with exclamation
points. I love this guy. I love this guy. And carry on, people. Soldier on. I got something important to do over here on the board, like, drink water. Bye.
Okay. Tim's got a good point. You know, it is a situation where, you know, teams go in and they just kind of, it's like a war zone. They drop all the bombs and then sneak off, and then it's up to somebody else to actually go in and straighten it back up. And it's, and he's right, it's not out of malicious intent. It's just out of not preparing and not knowing what you're getting into. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'll tell you, that's one of the reasons I have been on, residential investigations, but this is why I focus on historic locations, locations of public interest, because I really don't feel I am qualified to help anybody in crisis. Holy cow, am I even qualified to help myself? You know, it's a large undertaking, and I don't think people understand the scope and the gravity of what it entails.
Yeah, well, that's why, I mean, in the whole Ghosts of Hollywood series that I did, we didn't do any residentials, and I don't usually. I mean, the Mary Astor case was just something way out of the blue because the people were really panicky, and they read the book, and, you know, I had good people with me. I trust my team. But, I prefer, I love the history of the older places, and maybe not some that aren't so old, but they still have the history to them. And that's kind of my favorite thing. And I wrote about the site of the old Errol Flynn estate in one of my Ghosts of Hollywood books. Don't remember which one. And the lore is fascinating. And Scott Michaels drove me by there one day. We were going somewhere else. He goes, hey, look, you know, quick drive-by. But I want to hear about your experiences there, because that's a very interesting place.
Marla, I don't know if, you know, I remember you from, you know, our house in Hollywood. Then we moved up to a little place on Mulholland. And I don't know if you ever came up to that home.
No, I didn't.
We were two blocks away from Mulholland Farm. Mm. We were up there when Stuart Hamblin had purchased Errol Flynn's home, and it was still up there. I remember it because I used to feed horses carrots. I'd steal the carrots from, you know, Mom, and go out and feed the horses. And they were Stuart Hamblin's horses. They were on actually Mulholland Farm. It was kind of an interesting place. You know, of course, it was Errol Flynn's home, and, you know, all the stuff that, not all of the stuff, but most of the stuff that was reported in the tabloids at the time was true. You know, he had peepholes and, you know, mirrors, you know, so he could spy on people.
Mm-hmm.
But when the Hamblins moved in, they and the children of the Hamblins reported, you know, having odd things happen, like, you know, people, a naked woman trying to break into the house who wasn't there. You know, she was slightly transparent. There was a gray mist that would appear in one of the rooms that transitioned from the living room to another room that would happen frequently. You know, and this is an older, it was an older house. On the night that Errol Flynn passed up in Vancouver, they reported that the house shook violently. You know, it was the old heating system, you know, going out. But who knows? You know, is it coincidental, or was it, you know, something else? There were a lot of things. There were a lot of reports up there. Now the house has been razed. The house was torn down. Ricky Nelson moved in. Tracy Nelson, his daughter, had some rather odd experiences up there, and she felt that it was something older at one point, that it was something else. Ricky Nelson would actually say, you know, she's like, I saw somebody standing there. You know, he would kind of laugh it off, like, hey, that's Errol Flynn, you know, or that's just Errol. You know, later, Tracy, after Ricky had passed away tragically in a plane accident, she believed that it was somebody trying to warn her of her father's impending demise.
Mm-hmm.
The house was razed. After several more years, there was a murder up there after the house was abandoned, and then there was a fire. The house was razed. Another house was built. In fact, I believe it was Helen Hunt who actually had this house built. She never lived in it because of a divorce that she was going through. It was eventually sold, and I think the house that stands there now is Justin Timberlake's. The closest you can get to that estate is actually a mystery in itself. There is an obelisk that stands today that is just outside of where Errol Flynn's tennis court was.
Mm-hmm.
And this obelisk, it's not on any map. It doesn't have a street address. It has this little strip of land, and it's there. It's a true mystery. And I knew about this thing when I was a kid. I finally went back to take a look at it. I thought, okay, this is the closest I can get to the Errol Flynn estate. Maybe I can try and get some sort of evidence up here, see if I feel anything strange or, you know, hear anything. And honestly, I don't really feel stuff when I get into a place. I'm kind of dead meat when it comes into, you know, when it comes to, you know, feeling things. And if I feel something, then it is a very odd thing. So, you know, I'm up there. I'm looking at this thing, and it's a monument. And it's a monument to the Battle of Cahuenga. Okay, great. That happened a couple miles down the street. And then there's another plaque on there that's for the Treaty of Cahuenga, which also is, well, a couple miles down, and they already have a historic site for that. So why is this up here? On the backside, there is a plaque for James B. Lankershim. He's from the Lankershim family, who owned most of the San Fernando Valley at one time, and North Hollywood was going to be called Lankershim. He's got his plaque up there. Well, long story short, which is probably too late, Lankershim donated this land to the Arthur Letts Boy Scout camp on the provision that upon his death, a monument be built in his honor on this location, which was, you know, his favorite vista of the San Fernando Valley. The Boy Scouts agreed, and Lankershim did pass, and they started building this. It was built from stones from the gold mines of Madera up near Fresno. Those stones were brought down. Around that time, the Boy Scouts realized, uh-oh, we have a raw deal here. Because if they build this, the big thing is, well, I'll get to this in a moment. They built it, they sold off the land, you know, because Hollywood was encroaching, and they started building residential homes, but they couldn't sell this one piece of land with this obelisk on it. Why? I'll tell you why. Now, every newspaper report, everything online, everything in the archives of the Los Angeles Times, the Daily News, the New York Times, says that Lankershim was cremated and his ashes were scattered. It is questionable whether it was over the San Fernando Valley or over this area, but his ashes were scattered. That is not true. The Boy Scouts have perpetuated a lie. This is amazing. It actually originated with the Boy Scouts that Lankershim was cremated and his ashes were scattered. They built the monument. They know. He is interred underneath that monument. And they have not been able to get rid of that land because it is a burial. It's a burial site. They've covered it up, and they've tried over the years to get rid of this land. They've even tried to relocate it. Well, the folks at Campo de Cahuenga, the docents there, know about this, and they were the ones who uncovered the fact. They went downtown and started digging and realized, no, you can't move this because it is his burial. And they've been trying to, well, basically disrespect his grave, well, ever since Errol Flynn built his house. Wow. So I sort of made the connection that possibly what people had been experiencing in the home was not Errol Flynn, but something older, and it could have been James Lankershim. So I did an investigation of the area, and all I got were dogs barking and crickets. So, and that's the way investigations go. Sometimes you get something, and sometimes you don't.
Yeah.
But
well, you know,
I got
go ahead.
I got a whole heck of a lot of information on Lankershim, whose life was you know, an episode of Dynasty. You know, mm-hmm. he has a live-in nurse who really caused a furor, who ended up in her own tragic demise because it ended up being a horrible lawsuit because she claimed that he'd willed her money. And it went back and forth of her being awarded the money and the award being taken away. In the 50s, you know, she's living in Van Nuys. The story goes that she actually crawled into the trunk of her car and shot herself in the head because she was so ashamed that she couldn't get work, which is an interesting way to go at that time because usually people who commit suicide by gunshot in that era were men. Mm-hmm. So it's, I think, kind of suspicious. But, you know, You find out all these crazy things.
I know. You know, I mean, there's so many bodies buried in around Hollywood that people just don't know about. I mean, we went up to the Yamashiro restaurant on an investigation, mm-hmm. and lovely place, you know, you feel like you've just, you know, stepped into Tokyo. But we were standing out in the outside patio, and the woman that was taking us around said, you know, we were talking about the koi fish, and it's really quite beautiful. And she told us that the original owners of Yamashiro are buried there. So talk about dining with the dead. She wouldn't She kind of pointed out where they were. There's no markers or anything, but everybody knows. And it wasn't something that was legal, probably, you know, just like, what's his name that wrote Tarzan? And he's buried in the valley on his property.
Burroughs?
Yeah. Burroughs, yeah. There's a lot of things like that going on here that people don't know. And that's what I was kind of trying to fish out, those kinds of things when I was writing my books on Hollywood, because everybody knew about the Chinese Theater. Everybody knew about the Roosevelt Hotel, although we had something about the Roosevelt that nobody knew, but that was another story. But, you know, you just don't want to write the same thing. You want to go digging, and that's, especially with these historical places, that's exactly the thing that you want to do. Victoria Gross and I were over at Farmer's Market, and there's the original adobe on the site. It's kind of like across the street and whatever. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, Vicky, this is the, you know, we should really see if we could go and investigate there, because, I mean, nobody knows this adobe exists. It's across the street and behind a lot of bushes and, you know, whatever. And so we go bopping over there, and it didn't say private property or anything. So we're walking down this long driveway, and we're looking around, and we see this, and it's really fantastic. And all of a sudden, we hear dogs barking really loud and coming closer. So there were here were two witches that didn't have a broom, but we were running like hell, you know, to get out.
You know, I think I know that Rick Caruso owns that now.
Oh, okay.
The guy who built the Grove. I'm pretty darn sure he is the owner of that.
Yeah, I think they said it was, we found out later, it was their offices or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, please put a no trespassing sign if you don't want people there. Don't set the dogs on people, because it's a little scary. But I mean, there's so many things in this town that people have no clue about and are really, really kind of fascinating.
And, you know, if people haven't picked up your books and taken a look at what you've put down, you know, they may not have that insight. There is, you know, I have to say, Scott Michaels, your friend Scott Michaels,
mm-hmm.
brilliant resource. He is, like, absolutely out of this world phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
I had the good fortune of actually riding along with him. I was on an event with Bill Murphy of Factor Fake and his lovely wife Anita, and Scott Michaels was there, and I don't know if he knows this, but he's driving along, he's actually, you know, taking us to a location, and it's almost like automatic. His trivia is falling out of him, and he's got stuff that Hollywood diehards, people that have lived here their entire life, are hard pressed to know.
Yes,
it's truly he's a wonderful resource. And if anybody, you know, is in LA and you want to pick his brain about LA, you know, stuff, you know, go visit him. He's dearly departed tours. He's brilliant.
And they have a storefront on Sunset now, so there's actually a brick and mortar building. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And, And this is why I take him on investigations. I mean, he's finally into it, but he's still scared to death. He's really fun to have around because he makes me chuckle a lot, but, he knows it all. He knows, I mean, this man, well, that's why he's on E all the time with all these different things. Scott is just like a walking encyclopedia. And we were at Hollywood Forever. We're going to run out of time, and I don't want to do this.
I just saw that.
we were standing in front of Virginia Rapp, I don't know how you say it, her grave.
Mm-hmm.
And there was somebody buried next to her. And, you know, they say that she's the one that sits there at night and wails over her grave having been killed by Fatty Arbuckle and all that. And Scott goes, no, you know what? This is who this is, and this was somebody else, and this was her mother. This is, you know, she gave the description of the spirit and everything. She says, no, that's Virginia's mother, and she's crying because of her daughter. And, you know, I mean, he just starts spouting this stuff, not even thinking about it. And he's fascinating to have. I mean, he's a nice guy, too. But,
yeah, I
mean,
and I truly want to hang a recorder around his neck 24 hours a day.
Just
to get it all.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm really blessed to call him my friend, because for a number of reasons. I mean, he's a good guy, number one, but boy, does he know his stuff.
Yeah.
Really,
absolutely.
Really good. Now, another very active site here in Southern California is the Glen Tavern Inn up in Santa Paula. And that's kind of my not-so-clever segue into talking about the upcoming event, which features several of my friends like you, Richard Sennett, Mark Nelson, Reverend Tim's good friend, Rosalind Bowen, and a host of others, including Michael and Marty Perry. The thing covers all aspects of the paranormal. So can you tell everybody a little bit about the event, the inn, and what you'll be talking about?
Absolutely. Now, this is called the True Paranormal LA Supernatural Summit. It is possibly the most difficult name to say. It's a mouthful.
I didn't.
True Paranormal LA Supernatural Summit. This originally had a location in Los Angeles. It was going to be at Casa de Mexicano, but unfortunately, or fortunately, they've sold the building and they had to relocate this. So it is in the Glen Tavern Inn, which is actually a phenomenal place. It is in Santa Paula. You know, it's just outside of Ventura. And Santa Paula is an amazing little town. It's almost like a back lot. It's a quaint little place. And the Glen Tavern Inn has a history of, you know, has a paranormal history. In fact, it does tie into what I was speaking about earlier and the Princeton Laboratory experiments of, you know, thought form manifestation. There was an experiment there at the Glen Tavern that they believe has created an entity that exists there now, and people have been capturing this entity in pictures. So it's a phenomenal place. This is honestly an event that covers almost every facet of the paranormal study. There's going to be cryptozoologists, there's going to be demonologists. It's phenomenal. And when is it? It's the 8th and 9th. It's next week, Friday and Saturday. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole heck of a lot of speakers up there. And there will be an investigation on Saturday night, so you can get a chance to see what's going on there. And I was there actually almost a year ago this week for a convention. And it was... it was actually a really interesting investigation. I did find out a few things about the place, which I'm not going to say for the people that are going and going to investigate. I actually want to see if people find the same anomalous readings that I found. Okay. But it's truly packed with people. You know, I mean, Frank from Beyond Paranormal Investigations is one of the key people there. Frank, honestly, there are a few investigators out there that I would trust with my life. Mm-hmm. Frank is one of them, and he's going to be speaking. He's actually going to be speaking up there with he's got two subjects. He's going to be talking about Camarillo, you know, the old Camarillo Mental Hospital. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, is infamous just because of what it is. Mm-hmm. And also, he's going to be talking about, what is it? There's a hospital in New York, Pilgrim Hospital, which I've never heard anybody speak about. And so that's going to be exciting. Sid Schultz is going to be there. He was, at one point, the TAPS West Coast liaison. Peaches from California Paranormal Private Investigators. Peaches is another person I trust with my life. She does residential cases, and that's She's the person I refer residential cases to because she's got an incredibly solid team. Catherine Wilson, she's a psychic and medium. She's going to be up there. And, you know, of course, the Perrys, like you said, they're phenomenal. And, yeah, it's going to be a good fun time. Now, I have to say that it's Friday evening. It's probably going to be a little more fun and crazy. You know, it's not all, you know, hardcore paranormal, you know, serious talk. Mm-hmm. I think there's a pajama party that's happening on Friday night. So, I mean, it's fun. You know, we can, you know, we are serious about it, but, you know, we can have fun. I'm going to be up there. I'm going to be talking about validating sources, you know, how to validate sources. It sounds kind of silly, but, you know, it is important. And also,
it's important, yeah.
Yeah. And also, what else am I talking about? Holy cow, I forgot. Oh, perception. Perception and how our brain tricks us into wanting to see what we see. There's a whole heck of a lot more that I'm going to be talking about, but those are the two main topics.
Great. Is there a website that people can find out about more about it?
There is, actually. If you want to head over to, it's actually on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And if you type in True Paranormal LA, that's L period A, Supernatural Summit, you'll be able to find it. It's on Eventbrite as well, and it's under Supernatural Summit Event.
Okay, great. Because I think, you know, we can do it too. We on the West Coast, we can absolutely do it.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, we are so out of time, and there's so many other things I wanted to talk about, so I'm going to give you an invitation to come back so we can do some of that.
I would love to.
But, you know, I'm not that good a witch, because if I was, I'd be able to master the Gotta Stretch the Hour spell. So we're going to have to pick up where we left off at some point very soon. But thank you so much for popping in, and because I want to also tell people about your radio show and stuff like that. So we'll get you back soon.
Otherwise, I'd love to talk to you about, you know, pagans and witches and the paranormal and how come there's no investigators?
Oh, that's a trade secret, but there are.
Uh-huh.
There's just
there are
out there than people realize. That's how it works. Uh-huh. So we'll get into that.
Okay.
We'll get into that and a lot of other stuff. So we are going to take our leave. As always, I want to thank everybody for listening in tonight. And just so you know, I've got my Podomatic page at www.stirringthecauldron up and running again. Stirringthecauldron.podomatic.com. You can listen to this and all the other podcasts there. There's also an embedded player on my website at www.marlabrooks.com. And you can also find archived shows at iTunes. And on March 14th, the Rev and Witch are back together again with another Rev and Witch show. So mark your calendars and fasten your seatbelts, not necessarily in that order. And until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
This has been another edition of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Be sure to tune in next week at the same time for another great guest and more fun. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2009.
You have been listening to the Para-X Radio Network.